We are recording.
Thank you. Good evening and welcome. I'm Sean Brennan, president of the Delaware State Board of Education. I call the January 16th regular meeting to order. It is 5 p.m. This meeting is open to the public in person in the cabinet room of the Townsend Building in Dover, Delaware, and electronically via Zoom. The State Board of Education published a public meeting notice and meeting information on January 9th on the state public meeting calendar site. Thank you for your patience if we run into any technology issues as we simultaneously conduct this meeting in person and electronically. Today's agenda contains two opportunities for public comment. There is time allotted for regulations and then general public comment near the end of the meeting. Sign-up sheets are available on the table by the doors. If you did not previously sign up to provide public comment via email and are logged in via the URL, please type in your name, organization, and comment topic into the chat box now. If you're only participating via the call-in option and wish to make verbal public comment, please log in on via the meeting URL online. As required by statute, this meeting is being recorded and the recording will be available to the public on our website within 7 business days of this meeting. When voting on items for action, I will ask for all those in favor say aye, and we only do a roll call vote if there is a dissent. Also, as a reminder, when speaking or making a motion, please state your name first. Before we take the roll call this evening, I am pleased to introduce our newly confirmed board member, Jim Simmons. Welcome. Look forward to working with you. And after we do the roll call, we're going to give you the opportunity to give us a little bit about why you're here and what you want to do and what we can do. But a pleasure to have you here. Thank you. Mr. Veal, please do a roll call of the Delaware State Board of Education members.
Yes, sir. Mr. Brennan?
Present.
Dr. Griffin?
Present.
Mr. Kennan?
Present.
Dr. Lahavia?
Present.
Reverend Powell?
Present.
Mr. Sawney? Mr. Simmons?
Present.
Ms. Stevens?
Present.
Dr. Zaba? Mr. President, you have a quorum.
Thank you. I will also note that we have Deputy Attorney General Alex Corbin and State Board staff Kathleen Smith and Marco Avila participating in today's meeting. First on the agenda is the approval of the agenda. The board's agenda was posted on January 9th. Are there any changes to the agenda? And if there are not, I will entertain a motion to approve the agenda for today's meeting as presented.
President, I move the approval of the today's agenda as presented.
Griffin has made a motion. I need a second.
Stephen second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Approval of the December 12th regular meeting minutes. The December 12th regular meeting minutes were provided to the board in review in advance of this meeting. If there are no additions or deletions, I will entertain a motion to approve the December 12th regular meeting minutes as presented.
Mr. Kenton, so approved.
Kent has made a motion. Is there a second?
Lahavia second.
Lahavia second. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions?
Abstain. Simmons.
Jim Simmons. Abstain. Motion carries. Thank you. Recognition of State Board of Education members. Mr. Simmons, welcome aboard again. Please share your visions with us.
Being a lifelong educator, an opportunity to lead in a different seat and to help support the work of improving education in the state of Delaware. I've always operated from a point of leadership and servitude. And so here to serve as best in my capacity, looking to share what I know and to learn from others as well, providing multiple perspectives into the things that we deal with in education. So looking forward to the opportunity.
So are we, and you'll find we are a board that cares about education, a very diverse board, they're intelligent. I mean, it's a great thinking group here, and don't be scared to ask anybody any questions. We're here to answer. We want to make this a smooth transition, and want this to be the best it can be because we want Delaware to be number one.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. Also this evening, we are honoring the service of fellow board member Harvey Kenton. Shortly, we'll give you an opportunity to say a few words, too. But we are grateful for your contributions as an educator and advocate, a board member since January 2024. And I see your wife, Jeannie, is here tonight. Thank you for coming and welcome. Pleasure to meet you. Before we present you your award in order of excellence, would you like to say a few words, Harvey?
Well, I want to thank my wife for being here. We've been almost 61 years. I'm the lucky person.
Amen.
So it's... But I want to thank Sean and Kathleen and Dr. Holodeck and Deb, Meredith, Sage, Nisha, Marco, and Jim. And I know I probably missed somebody. It's dangerous to call out names, but I apologize if I did that. But it's been a wonderful opportunity. Our three children are all educators. They all have teaching degrees, and it's been special to me. I was fortunate enough to work with Deb and Dr. Holodeck when I was state representative, and it was a great experience. And I told Kathleen tonight, I'm just a phone call away. You know, I'm not leaving anywhere. I just slowing down a little bit. I just turned 83, and it's time to just prioritize what I'm doing. So, but I want to thank you all. God bless you all. Thank you.
Thank you. You've been an asset, and in your short time here, it's amazing what I've learned from you. I appreciate it. I'm sure other board members have things they want to echo. And after that, we do have a photo op, and I'll let you have a nice award. And well, I put this tie on, like, just for you. Anybody else?
Well, Harvey, I've already told you I'm going to miss you tremendously. It was my pleasure working with you before when I was working as a lobbyist, and now to get you as a colleague here on the state board, it was wonderful having you as part of our group. I'm going to miss you dearly.
My honor, my pleasure. Thank you.
I just want to echo and say thank you for a couple of things. You and I were confirmed on the same day. And my wife already knew you as the executive director of DAPI. She said that you had, as a state representative, been a longtime supporter of theirs in Sussex County. And so to have had a distinguished career in the General Assembly, to leave that, go to school, and then say you were coming back into service of the state, you really do exemplify what we desire to see in not just the students that are coming through, but all Delawareans. So for me, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity that I've had to, in this short year, get to know you and to glean from your wisdom. May we all desire to serve the way you serve. Thank you.
You mentioned the DAPI program. That was one of my special pet peeves. That was a wonderful thing to support.
Want to do the photo op up here or steps up here?
Traditionally, in front.
That's fine. That's a good place.
Sure.
All right, Harvey, come on, step on up. Your wife can join us if she wants. Mark, you want to join us?
Sure.
We'll do all the board members right in here with us.
I was going to say we'll do a several, like you and Harvey, you and Harvey and Jean, and yeah.
You get.
Lovely. 1, 2, 3. And another one. 1, 2, 3. Lovely.
All right. Let's have everybody up here, please. Everybody, every board member, please.
Run. Yeah, we'll squeeze in. I think so.
Yes, I have everybody actually. So 1, 2, 3. And one more. 1, 2, 3.
Thank you. Thank you. Get the box up in a safe spot.
There you go.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Next on the agenda is the Reading Consortium update. This is for information. State Representative Namdi Chukwuocha is here to provide an update on work of the Reading Consortium. Representative, welcome. Thank you for making it here tonight and a presentation for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, just a couple words of appreciation first. Just like to thank former Representative Kenton for his service. And I mean, it's remarkable, but thank you, sir, for your commitment. I'm thinking about you, all the years you served, and I'm thinking about me sitting here, and I'm just like, that's what service is. And we talked about it yesterday during our swearing in, well, Tuesday, and Frank Cook, Representative Cook, talked about service and what it really means. And you are truly the epitome of that, a great example. And I thank you for your service and helping to make this state what it can and should be. So thank you, sir. And secondly, wanted to welcome my neighbor, Mr. Simmons, my good neighbor, my daughter's former principal, to the State Board of Education. He brings a wealth of knowledge and experience and truly understands from the school level perspective, the community perspective, as well as policy perspective about ways in which we can improve and truly make the educational outcomes for all of our children what they can and what we wish they would be. So thank you, sir.
Sir, would you like to use the clicker for this slide?
I sure will, because I won't take up too much of your time. But as you know, our Reading Consortium was created, and our primary charge was to look at redistricting for the city of Wilmington. We were here a few months ago, and we presented an update. And our, let's see, there we go. Yep, so our interim plan was when we were last here, when we first approved it. We approved that in May the 9th. And our interim plan basically highlights, it denoted that we as a body believe and support that the Christiana School District should no longer serve the city of Wilmington. And we would like to reduce the number of districts from four that are currently serving the city of Wilmington to two or fewer districts. With that, we created a 18-month timeline as a part of our interim plan recommendations. And we also created a subcommittee structure. And those three subcommittees are operational impact, the fiscal impact subcommittee, and a community engagement subcommittee. Is it going? Okay, sorry. So a part of our interim recommendations, one of the recommendations for our plan was to have a landscape analysis that will look at the social drivers and determinants of education that impact our children. So this landscape analysis is currently underway, and it will look at all of the impacts of our children, both inside and out of school, what impacts our children's learning. Our framework will also include recommendations that deal with policy reform, as well as revenue, state investment, and the charter and choice reform efforts. Our landscape analysis, we're very proud of this work. It's just starting. We believe that many, and to me, this is what separates our Reading Initiative from many of the previous iterations that try to address redistricting. I believe that our landscape analysis is going to truly provide us with current data that will support the reason why we are suggesting our final recommendation for the number of districts and which districts that we believe should be serving the city of Wilmington. So our landscape analysis, we've recently selected our partner vendor who will be providing this, and it's the American Institute for Research. As many of you know, they just recently supported our state and our funding reform work analysis. And so we're very happy to have them on board. The goal of our landscape analysis is to help to inform the work of our redistricting. So their work that will be done in reports, and those reports will be working hand in hand with our committee substructure, as well as working through our community engagement of subcommittee to work with stakeholders in the community that will drive not only the work that we're doing, but also the awareness of our redistricting efforts. The landscape analysis itself is broken down into two major components, one dealing with the educational needs assessment, which will focus on the resources, the experiences, and outcomes inside of our schools and districts that impact the city of Wilmington and Northern New Castle County students. And then the social drivers of health and education landscape analysis, which will focus on the factors outside of schools that impact our students and their families. Our timeline, projected timeline for our landscape analysis is broken down into three phases. The first phase is the discovery phase, which we are currently in. And that will run from December through March. And then the second phase, and at the end of each phase, there's a report. So there will be a report. And then we will move into the second phase, which is the data collection and analysis from March through July. And then a second report will be there. And then the third report moving us into the code interpretation. And then our final reporting stage, which will be July through October. And basically here, it just outlines each one of the phases in terms of what will be the main components and highlights of each phase. The first phase will be from November through February, where we currently are, deals with reviewing current data, initial data review, desk review, and also initial interviews with stakeholders and focus groups, as well as the revised analysis plan approach. The second phase will be after the first reporting period. And that will be again from March to June, and it will focus on the qualitative and qualitative research, as well as key objectives for the research. The highlights will be about the neighborhood specific assets, describe the place-based specific trends for our children, birth through 18, incorporate local knowledge and storytelling to provide a more intimate understanding of the journeys of our students and their families in Wilmington. Phase three, which will run from July through October, and it will deal with the reporting. So you have the phase one report in February, the second phase, and that will again deals with the primary results from the discovery activities. The phase two report, which will be in May, the preliminary results from the neighborhood and school level analysis and focus groups. And the phase three report, which will be in August, will be the finalized analysis of the neighborhood and school analysis, stakeholder interviews and focus groups. And then the final report and recommendations will be delivered between September and October. The community engagement process, this will be utilizing PAR, or participatory action research, where we will have 15 community ambassadors supporting with data collection, interpretation, and prioritization. And the co-interpretation will be led and co-led with AIR, who again is the vendor. They will lead sessions working to identify the findings and also interpretive findings for mixed groups, and reviewing the findings and offering insights. The project overview, of course, we have the governor and the General Assembly, then the writing body. We're also working in partnership with the Wilmington Learning Collaborative, which is an established 501c3, which is focuses on improving the needs and greater collaboration and alignment between the schools in Wilmington. So they have nine of the schools in Wilmington are a part of the WLC, and they're working hand in hand with Reading in order to, one, understand the challenges inside of our schools, and also to work in terms of community engagement, creating parent and community councils, which will work in a lot of the stakeholder and community engagement. As you see, that the three subcommittees, operational, the fiscal, and community engagement, and then our working team, the ARIF working team, and then the PAR team, the 15 workers who will be helping to support the data collection. The timeline beginning, I won't read it all, but basically every month there is basically a due date. Rather, it's going to be a report, and the reports that are coming from AIR will help to fuel the work that's happening inside of the subcommittees. So whichever, when there is a report, there will be workshops. We're having workshops for our three standing committees. So when a report comes out, they will utilize that report. That work will go into each report, or each subcommittee is broken down for the 13 stipulations and the legislation that we have to address in the final report. So they're broken down across the subcommittees. The reports are geared toward those. So each subcommittee will be working toward the stipulations. So when a report comes out, each one of the subcommittees will get that, review that, and then they will submit. They will begin addressing their stipulations, and it will provide an update. So we'll continue update. And once we get so many updates, we'll come back and we'll present to you the updates so far from each subcommittee as they are going toward the final plan. So we're in January, and in April, we're going to have our first subcommittees where we're having a retreat in March, and we'll have retreats report coming from AIR, and then there'll be updates, and at the updates, we'll again come back here and present them. And again, it's a monthly timeline, so every month there is a report coming from AIR or the subcommittees, and is again adding on to the work toward the final report from each of the subcommittees. So our goal again is to have our final report finalized in November with the AIR findings, and then to work toward December, have a full body meeting where we will vote on a final redistricting plan. And then once we vote on that in December, our goal will be to have it to this body, to present it to this body in January. And of course, by statute, you have 90 days to review it and give us back feedback. And at the end of those 90 days, it will be our goal, our duty, task, obligation to present it to Comptroller General as well as to the General Assembly. And we would hope to have the General Assembly vote on our final redistricting plan of June of next year. Our subcommittee overviews, again, it was the three subcommittees, are operational impact, fiscal impact, and community engagement. Again, each one of them are geared towards certain stipulations that are from the legislation. Some of the members are members of Reading, but we also have additional members who are maybe specialized in certain areas, whether it be the community or through district representation. The first committee, so it's a little just overview for each committee. Of course, the operational impacts deals with the orderly reassignment to be the least disruptive for our students and their families as we look toward changing the boundaries and reassessment. The operational impacts are, as you can see, a list of the membership as well as the chairs for each of the subcommittees. Fiscal subcommittee overview, really looking at the resources that are needed to support the redistricting efforts, and also the additional potential additional needs to meet the educational outcomes, the educational needs of the students based on the final plan. The leadership of that subcommittee, as well as the membership, and the community engagement a subcommittee, as well as their charge in terms of engagement, informing the community. And this subcommittee works between all of the subcommittees. So the community engagement is a big part of both the fiscal and operational subcommittees as well. And then you have the leadership for that subcommittee, as well as its membership. the, as we say, the big ideals for in terms of project coordinating. All of the efforts, of course, are our Senator Lockman and Matt Dinn, who are the co-chairs. Myself is the project chair for the redistricting effort. And then we have advisory from the Department of Education, as well as we are awaiting our minority caucus member who will join Reading in that capacity. Our subcommittee, the framework, so our committees will again focus on planning with our district. A lot of it, because working with the WLC in terms of their work, their direct work with the Christiana School District in the interim plan, that it will help to guide the subcommittee approach. So as the landscape analysis, the reports, again, they will help to fuel the work in the subcommittees. There are any questions, I welcome the opportunity to answer them. Again, we are very, very excited about our landscape analysis and really think it will be very beneficial to the work that we're doing in terms of providing and just additional awareness and also additional thought and being truly data-driven, and that will fuel our work for our final recommendations in their plan.
Are any questions for a representative?
Yes, Mr. President, I have a couple. Just the first, and I said when you were before us before that I'm very interested in the work that the Reading Consortium is doing as a, I guess I can't say lifelong Wilmington resident since I don't live there now, but one who actually grew up in the city and has my heart still there. At the beginning of your presentation, you talked about how the final plan will be for there to be two or fewer districts in the city. But I see again that the presentation only speaks to removing Christiana from the city. Should we expect when we receive the final plan that plan will only then have two districts, or should we expect that it will still represent three districts in the city?
Yes, our goal is to have two or fewer, and a part of the work that is happening now, and like traditionally, you've heard, like we had the river plan where it was Red Clay and Brandywine splitting at the Brandywine River. Even in our previous iteration where we had the rivers plan with WEIC, we had Red Clay and Brandywine, but Colonial was still there. Colonial, technically, right now, they don't have any schools in the city of Wilmington, and I believe the secretary may know, but I believe it's a few hundred children that are directly from Wilmington being served by that district. They are a part of Reading. They are involved in the conversation, and no stone is being left unturned. So to think that it may be Brandywine and Colonial, it may be Red Clay and Colonial, all of that is still on the table in terms of what partners, but our goal is to have two or fewer. So every district is included, except of course Christiana, but the other districts are all in play, all a part of the conversation in terms of trying to vet and to see how we can best serve the needs for the city of Wilmington and the students.
Thank you for that. That's I feel better about that. My second question is regarding the role, as you see it, of the state board in the process. I know that Reading has been 2019, I believe, or so, and yet when it comes to us, by statute, I'm sure, or by the organizing legislation, we have 90 days to correct. Review it all. And as I look at it, there are a number of things that we are required to make sure is in our review as it comes back to you. You spoke about once AIR begins their work, monthly updates. Does that mean that we should expect to have a representative from Reading come monthly to how will you keep the board apprised of what's happening so that we don't have 90 days to review 6 years worth of work?
It definitely, I appreciate the question. And as that we would definitely have I don't know if monthly updates will be coming here, but definitely quarterly. as our interim plan changes and as the work from the subcommittees changes and begins to guide our final report, every time there's a new iteration or we make a step forward, we will come back here and present it. So it's not going to be you have the final report at one time. It's going to be at stages as the stages are developed and we certain stipulations are coming from certain one of our subcommittees. As they are combined and begin to come together, we will present it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I also have a couple of questions following up with what my colleague just raised in terms of state board participation. Is there the possibility that a state board member or two could serve in an ex officio capacity as part of Reading? When I take a look at our party powers, duties, and responsibilities listed under Delaware Code, it does indicate that for regulations and rules that come before the state board, that it would be best that they be developed with input from the state board. And so I know that we serve on a variety of committees, for example, CSAC, we serve, that's for Charter School Approval Committee. We serve in an ex officio capacity where we have the ability to ask questions and provide input. We also have people serving on the Teacher Evaluation Advisory Committee in an ex officio capacity, again, that can provide input during the decision-making process before things come to the board. And, you know, again, having worked in some of the schools in the city of Wilmington, along with Terry Waller, when we were doing some work in some of the schools, I'd love to see us involved if we could be in an ex officio capacity. I mean, I do as much as I can to try to listen to your meetings online, but if there were a greater way of participation, I think that would be great.
I'm not sure if I'm that decision maker, but I 100% assure you, we welcome you. We would love to have you as an ex officio membership of our body. I don't know how it happens. I will check with my chairs of our body as soon as I leave here, but I'm certain it's one that we can make happen, and I will. I'm certain that that's something that we would welcome your participation 100%. And in addition to, again, us coming here with frequent feedback, we would love to have you sitting around the table participating in our workshops for the subcommittees 100%. I believe we welcome the state board's involvement. I think that the state board, to us, those 90 days are very important because it will give us the opportunity to make sure that we are addressing your concerns. But if we're able to address those concerns before we get to the final, or help to mitigate some of those concerns before we get to our final, it only makes sense. So I'm certain I speak for the body, and I'm sure my chairs, if they were here, would concur with me. But again, I'm sure we will have get to the chair, and we will get back to you with some finality and process and how we can make that happen.
I appreciate that. The second question I have for you, in the press this morning, there was an article that spoke to the Pete DuPont Freedom Foundation identifying semi-finalists for their grant awards. And one of the semifinalists was identified as a Richard Forston, who was coming up with a Wilmington school district plan. And so I was curious about whether you were aware of him and his plan.
I haven't, and I'm glad you brought it up because I will look into it. And it's funny because, of course, with our new governor and so many other things coming into play, many people have many ideals about Wilmington, especially a Wilmington school district. And I myself have been a long advocate that we really need a Wilmington school district. But understanding the challenges of what a Wilmington school district used to be in our current landscape, if you look at our schools that we used to have that are now charter schools, where are we going to fit all these children? So we have, unless we're going to build two new schools and give us a burning hot. So is creating more challenges than to address the challenges that we have to think of a Wilmington school district. So I would love to meet this gentleman and also the people who funded him, because maybe that funding could have supported Reading. But I would also welcome that, because actually currently this evening at 6:30, the Wilmington City Council is voting on creating their own Office of Education, and you thinking about other entities. So I haven't heard of this gentleman nor his work, but I thank you for mentioning it.
Online, that's where the article was today. Yeah,
thank you.
You're welcome.
If I can just, if no one else has anything, just piggyback off what I am hearing in what Ms. Stevens is saying. We want to, I think that not only do we want to be involved, my concern, let me just speak for Griffin, is that as I look at the Act and it talks about how the Act allows a State Board of Education to change or alter the boundaries based on the recommendations from Reading, I just don't want us to be in the position that because it says we have a date certain that we have to make the decision, that we are put in the position where without having vetted it ourselves, we're basically rubber stamping what has been almost a decade's worth of work by a body of people I know and trust the work that they're doing. But because we've been given the role that we have to look at it, I want to make sure that we have the opportunity to look at it ourselves and do what the Act has asked us to do.
Absolutely. And I think clearly in our mandate and charge, and I know through our implementation of Reading and the way we're going about our assuming our tasks and duties, we truly value the State Board, your input, your involvement, not just in terms of the final stamp of approval, but for you understanding the decisions that we're making, why we're making these suggestions. And we think that these updates will provide us that opportunity to let you know, oh, we're making a right turn. So this is where we're headed. So you're able to see very early on before we get to that final plan about some of the direction in which we believe we may take based on the work from our subcommittees.
I just want to say I appreciate the timeline that you're using. It's a long time coming. At least we know we have something in plan.
Correct.
We're moving forward, which is great. I'm would be appreciative, like everybody's been saying, just kind of get us the information, because facts are friendly. We don't want to take and upload it all at once, but
absolutely
something drastic. If you come quarterly, it's fine. If we have a member on our ex officio, that's great. If you just have a one pager you want to send every month to us, we'll take that. But anything you can do to keep us current will make it easier in the long run.
Absolutely. Your recommendations have been taken into consideration. And again, I'm certain we can meet those requests.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
I got somebody.
Reverend Powell. Yeah, this is Reverend Powell. Good evening, Representative Nnamdi. Good to see you this evening. And thank you once again for your advocacy and your commitment to this endeavor. You're so passionate, and I thank God. I think I saw you yesterday as you spoke at the press conference for this new office in the City Council for Office of Education Advocacy. And I thought that was very, I think they're heading in the right direction. One thing I wanted to ask you, I'm really excited about the landscape analysis and the different phases that you have. And I like the one that you talked about doing an analysis in school and more importantly, in the community. I think that's significant. Years ago, I had the opportunity working with Stop the Violence Coalition and the Surgeon General's report on youth gun violence. And it talked about protective factors, and two of the most significant protective factors in a young person's life that could have them to avoid the criminal justice system is an abhorrence to violence, really hating violence. And then the other thing was a commitment to education, with two strong protective factors that really could impact a child's life. And so when we talk about a commitment to education, that's not only just in the school, not only in the family, but it's a commitment to education from the community perspective to raise up the significance and the importance of education. And so I'm probably not telling you anything, though. I'm just really kind of laying the context for this your community engagement process. I'm just asking the question with your researchers. When they go into the community, it says that on page 11 of your PowerPoint, it said it would include an addition of up to 15 community ambassadors to support data collection, interpretation, and prioritization. I thought that was a great model. I've had some conversation with President Congo in terms of how the city could be a part of this, raising the commitment of education from the community perspective and kind of dicing, if you would, some of the community in a quadrant. Let me give you an example. I serve a church in Southbridge. In our community, it's contained. And within our community, we have so many young people that are going to different schools. We got going to Pritchett. We've got the Kitch Academy. We got going to different charters, so forth and so on. It's a lot of young people and families divided going different ways without having a community approach to lifting up the significance of education. And so an ambassador in perhaps a corridor of the city, east side, northeast, west side, south bridge perhaps, could be a liaison to connecting a lot of the nuances that are happening across districts, the state, so forth and so on. So as the Reading, I say that long context just to ask you the question, have you considered providing some type of model from a community perspective of lifting up the engagement for community parents from a community perspective?
Absolutely, and thank you for your question. And 100%, as I mentioned, the community engagement, their work stretches through all of the subcommittees and is very critical. Not only, as was mentioned with City Council, a part of our key engagement, we were there yesterday during that. They mentioned us in terms of Reading, but also with the Wilmington Learning Collaborative, working hand in hand with all of these entities, realizing that one of the major outcomes or goals for the Wilmington Learning Collaborative and their 9 Wilmington schools is to create parent and community councils. It's those parent and community councils that we will be working with. Our goal is to tap into those parent and community councils that are representative of each of those 9 schools. We're going to tap into our civic associations, our faith-based community, to bring everyone in to be a part of this conversation in terms of education. But those ambassadors, we're really thinking of those parent and community councils would be the hub of where those individuals are come from. And as we have our community engagement sessions in the community, they will be facilitated with the WLC. We will work with, our schools and the parent community councils that are being formed inside of the schools will be our base to get that hands-on input from our parents and directly from the school communities. You mentioned the South Bridge and how the South Bridge community, with Palmer no longer being there, that so those children being sent out have to have a representative that represents that community, who is a part of a parent community council, be it that one of the schools that they attend or from one of the faith-based organizations, or could even be one of our nonprofit partners that is working with us.
Great, that sounds intriguing. Yeah, because when I saw the 15 community ambassadors, I know they're gonna be doing a lot of the research and actually planting the seed to come back to make the recommendation. But that same model could be dispersed in the community after that's done, so that someone is left in the community to do the work and be the coordinate the initiative, so it's just not left to just the organization, but someone is there and reporting back to the broader body for accountability and alignment, I guess is what I'm saying.
Sure. No question, and complete agreement, because it's that work, and it really depends on our messaging and creating the correct awareness. When our initial plan was released and it was noted that our goal was to remove Christina, of course, this shock went across our city, and parents were saying, thinking it was going to start immediately. Like their kids were getting ready to go to new schools and it will be happening very soon for this new school year that we're currently in. Of course, that wasn't the case. So we had to think about ways and messaging and realizing that community engagement and creating that awareness for our decisions and every step of the way. So community engagement, again, as our plan is developed to ensure that our community is aware, they understand the timeline. So when things go into effect, where we are in terms of our planning process and the impact that it will have on our students, our schools, our families, and our city overall. So I think that our goal, and again, as you mentioned with city council, is to really bring about that awareness and having the city be a part of this. So they're able to, well, each one of our council members can be a part of this, our city council president, and again, working with the new mayor, and understanding how important education is, because we know education was stripped as one of their duties and responsibilities. So now they're beginning to reinsert themselves, and we're welcoming them into the fold of Reading with the WLC and initiatives that are working to support their work just as they can support ours.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming tonight. I'll give our regards to Senator Lochman also, and we encourage you to keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I don't think there's any further questions before we go. Reverend Powell, I do enjoy your backdrop of Howard High School.
The Howard High School.
Very nice. Thank you, Representative, for coming, and I appreciate all your information you brought to us.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, everyone. Next on the agenda is charter schools. It is charter school updates. It's just for information. Leeward Travers, Director of Charter School Office, and is here this evening to provide updates on the work for the charter school office. Mr. Travers, anything to report?
I didn't necessarily have a written update this month, but I can give just a brief update on the renewing schools and their conditions. I did speak with the curriculum instruction and professional development a work group, and each of the three schools that still have an outstanding condition around curriculum have been working with them, scheduling meetings, and working to get those conditions satisfied. I do believe that by the next time we meet in February, that those schools should be have met those conditions.
That'd be great.
With that being said, we actually have started, and it's a continuous cycle renewal, so we've started the next steps in next year's renewals with the curriculum instruction professional development work group. They will be hosting technical assistance sessions with our renewing schools this winter, and schools will begin submitting curriculum actually in April. So a much lighter load next year. We have two renewing schools, which is much lighter than it has been for the last 3 years. But I will work with Ms. Smith to have some state board representation for those two schools.
Great. That'll be great. Any questions for Mr. Travers? Okay, next on the agenda is Aspira Georgetown Charter School approval. This is for action. We have one charter school up for approval on this evening's agenda. The documentation that is a part of the record for the approval of the application is posted on the charter school office web pages and was shared to the board in advance. I will open the floor to Secretary Holodick to provide his decision on a new charter school application for Aspira Georgetown Charter School.
Sure. After reviewing the Charter School Accountability Committee's recommendation, as well as the public record, I'm recommending approval of the new charter school application that was submitted by Aspira Georgetown. We have two of their leaders with us here this evening and appreciate their presence. And I'm making that recommendation without condition. That means that the school would actually begin to operate in the fall of 2026. In Georgetown, you're probably aware, we have an Aspira school that is in the Newark area, and has grown tremendously. Forgive me, Dr. Waite, Lopez Waite, for not remembering how many years now. 14. I was going to go with a dozen. So time flies, as we all know. So that's my recommendation for this evening in regard to Aspira Georgetown.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments from board members? If not, I will entertain a motion to assent to the secretary's decision regarding the approval of Aspira Georgetown Charter School.
I have one question, Mr. Kenton. Did you say fall of 2026, or did you mean this year?
Fall 2026. This upcoming year, 2025, okay, will be a planning year.
Mr. Kenton, so moved.
Griffin, second.
All righty. Griffin has second. Any further discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Next is, thank you, Leroy. Have a good evening. Next on the agenda is Professional Standards Board for Regulations for Discussion or Action. Dr. Linnea Bradshaw, Executive Director of the Professional Standards Board, will present three regulations for information. Okay. Dr. Bradshaw.
I am just promoting her now.
It'll be Regulation 1517, Paraeducator Permit for Information, Regulation 1554, Family and Consumer Science Teacher for Information, and Regulation 1572, Teachers of Students Who Are Gifted or Talented for Information. All right, Dr. Bradshaw, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you, as always. So I'd like to start with 1517. 1517, there is really just one simple amendment to this, and that it came about when we had a student who wanted to be qualified via a GED, and we had thought when we wrote the regulation that a high school diploma or its equivalent meant GED, but it actually does not legally. If you look at it, the equivalent of a high school diploma is something like a Groves diploma or something like that. And so when we worked through it, we wanted to make sure we honor the GED, because if they wanted a GED and then they also wanted to become an instructional para, they would have to take the para pro test as well. And then we also consulted the director of adult and prison ed. And she had told us that actually the word for it is secondary credential. So that's why it reads the way it does. So the diploma, the equivalent of a high school diploma approved by a state, or a secondary credential approved by a state. States use different tests other than GED. So that's the new language that we put in there. It is in there in several different places. So in the application process, et cetera, et cetera. Are there any questions about it's the same change, if just in there four different times.
Questions for Dr. Bradshaw? Believe so.
All right, and moving on to 1554. This is a repeal, although not really a repeal. It just says that we will no longer issue this certificate as of August 2025. We made this change at this time because the praxis is changing. They had a new praxis for family and consumer sciences. And so I went to the CTE work group, and the people who get certified through for culinary and hospitality and the teacher academy, those are the two things that are kind of under family and consumer sciences at this point. They come in really through the skilled and technical sciences teacher pathway in culinary and hospitality, and then teacher academy. The requirements for teaching in teacher academy are simply that you are a licensed teacher. And so the facts, it's kind of an outdated concept and doesn't really fit the model of CTE that is working right now. So we just decided that it was a good time to sunset this one. And then, of course, everyone who currently holds the cert will continue to hold the certificate, but then the others will come through under STS.
Any questions? Okay, 1572, please.
1572, this is simply an update. There are a lot of changes, mostly because it hadn't been done since 2020. The biggest piece that has changed is that there is no university program for gifted and talented education. And so it has been, I think, probably the only certificate that we have that was achievable through only professional development, or the only pathway we have within Delaware is professional development. And it was a series of Schoology courses. Those courses sunset in 2023, and we went through the approval process of a micro-credential pathway. And so at this point, educators are completing three micro-credentials in order to gain this certification. And so both of those are covered under 4.1.1.4, which is a department-approved educator prep program. So when we switched from the Schoology-based courses to the micro-credential-based courses, we did not need to change the regulation at that time. However, it is something that maybe a lot of people don't know about. And we wanted to make sure that if people were looking at the regulation and wondering how to become gifted and talented certified in the state of Delaware, they would know that. And so we did actually add the micro-credentials into the regulation in 4.1.1.6. And so it names the three micro-credentials and then what the qualifications are. And it's important to remember that gifted and talented is a category certificate. And that means that a person needs to have a content area standard certificate in order to add gifted and talented to it. So it's not something that one can hold in a standalone way. Are there any questions?
Questions for Dr. Bradshaw? All right. Well, thank you for presenting and have a good evening.
Yes, you too. Thank you so much.
Public comment on regulations. Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for public comments on regulations. Ms. Smith, do we have anyone signed up for public comment on regulations?
We do not have anyone signed up online, and I received no emails ahead of time.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to state board business, committee and meeting reports. There was an opportunity for members to provide information and written reports made available on e-board on any events or committee meetings attended since the last meeting. Is there anything anyone would like to share further? Pretty quiet month for me, folks. I'm just going to say it.
Well, I have a couple of things that I'd like to share. First of all, I didn't get a chance to include it in my report since they were due on Tuesday, but yesterday I had the opportunity to attend Appaquinimic's Engineering Science Fair, which, to say the least, it just blew me away. There were 27 student teams from the high schools in Appaquinimic demonstrating a variety of projects that they had created as part of their engineering classes. I was able to revisit the student groups that I had seen earlier this year in Corey Hafer's class and see their finished products, including the chicken exercise equipment that one particular team had crafted, which was great. But again, the quality of those projects, I spent 2 hours there and was just absolutely amazed. From machines that automatically inflate surgical gloves and hopefully at some point sterilize them so that doctors can just put their hands into the machines and save time. The gloves are automatically put on, to sports equipment with devices for your thumb and the fleshy part here to eliminate the vibration from baseball bats if you hit them in the wrong spot, or helmets for lacrosse players that are going to be far more protective than what's currently available and cheaper, to an all-female team that I think had the majority of the spectators there looking at their new ladder that was far more durable and safe for people from the way they had constructed it so it would not collapse. As I said, I just think the students there had done an outstanding job. It was great to see equal numbers of male and female students, because I know frequently female students are discouraged from looking into the STEM areas, and to see these female teams doing an outstanding job, it was fantastic. It really was. They are having another fair in May. And so I would invite my colleagues to come along, join me again. I think you will be duly impressed. And for all those pundits and talk show people who say education doesn't occur in Delaware, they need to get out of their ivory towers and come visit students like this that are doing an outstanding job and getting quality Delaware education. So that was one event. From last month, I was able to attend again another NASB virtual seminar. And this was part of their year-long series that they've been running on principals in the United States. And this one was particular to rethinking the role of the principal. And it was provided by the Aspen Institute. Aspen has been doing a multi-year research project on the role of the principal. They've also been doing a lot of work with the Wallace Foundation. And Wallace has been engaged here in Delaware, my God, Mark, decades.
At least 20 years.
Because I can recall doing work with Jackie Wilson and Joe Murphy when we were taking a look at teacher leadership qualities and standards and what they should be. And so the research was really very well presented. And I've included some of the points that they made that evening, you know, one of them being in discussing the role of the principal. They feel that principals, who are by many researchers identified as the second most impactful person in a school building for the children, second only to teachers, that we're compelling them in the way schools are structured to wear too many hats. Because you would like to use the key leverage point of having them as an instructional leader, and yet we're asking them to be a building manager, a human capital manager, a community leader, and a public health official, in addition to being an instructional leader. And what they found was that all of these expectations were taking a significant toll on the principals, with 85% recorded as stating that they were under a high level of stress, and 16% taking a look at retirement, early retirement, or just leaving the profession because of the expectations being what they were. And what they found was these principals wanted to be the instructional leaders. They felt that was where they could make the greatest impact, along with what we talked about earlier tonight with Nandi's presentation, in terms of getting the support of the community and building the community in as an integral part of the school. But what they found was the preparation programs that they had didn't always support those efforts, didn't support them in being the instructional leaders, and didn't support them by offering them ways to engage the community more fully. And so, again, taking a look at some of the research out there, and Wallace has put together a lot of research on leadership. One study that they particularly cited was a 2021 piece called How Principals Affect Students in Schools. If you've got the time, I'd strongly suggest you read it. It had a lot of good conclusions about what was needed. But coming out of Aspen, they felt that we really did have to put into play some shifts in how we view the principal and what they should be doing. They also talked about changes that would help. And I listed those, some of those in my report, you know, taking a look at high quality preparation programs that also include internships. A lot of people are noting states that are instituting, similar to grow your own programs for teachers, they were citing grow your own programs for principals, whereby principals currently operating in schools would identify those teachers that are in leadership roles and that would have the skill set to be able to assume a principalship, and getting them into an internship program or a cohort that would prepare them to take on the role of principal. The research that had been done by Wallace and others showed that those people who were serving as vice principals or teacher leaders usually had the greatest degree of impact, noticeable impact, on the instructional improvement of the students in those schools. And so they were really recommending these grow your own programs. Interestingly, another thing that they were taking a look at was how to determine whether someone was proficient to be a principal. And they particularly cited the Massachusetts Department of Education, which has just now instituted a performance assessment for leaders, pulling away from praxis, which surprised me because I thought, you know, everybody worshiped at the altar of praxis, but pulling away from praxis and putting in place a portfolio system that basically examined the candidates in four different areas: data analysis, the professional learning community, teacher practice evaluation, and community engagement. And so creating an action research project where these candidates would identify a problem within their school, they would draft a plan, they would implement the plan, and then their portfolio would reflect their reflections of what happened during that period of time. Added to that, a 500-hour practicum that they were expected to complete as part of this, as well as being provided with mentors during their particular learning experience. Rhode Island has recently put in a new apprenticeship program, again, the Grow Your Own model. It was designed with community input, and the idea was that the apprentices would gain both experience as assistant principals, and by being an assistant principal, they're earning and learning, similar to the way we move paraprofessionals into the teaching profession, and they are able to learn and earn in order to get their degrees. They also suggested District of Columbia has pulled the building manager responsibilities from their principals and to have somebody on board in the school called the Director of Strategy and Logistics. So that person would take over the building manager role and afford principals the ability to be the instructional leader where they can make a difference with student achievement and helping the educators in their building get to a better system. And then finally, there was a school district, the Tulsa Public Schools, suggested that the districts create school partner teams, where these teams, again, would take from the principal that building manager role. The team would be responsible for school strategy, talent management, data application, and would partner with the principal to improve the academics. They would meet with the principals on a biweekly basis and would help the principals in developing the plans for their schools instructionally. Again, making it more available, the time available for principals to be the instructional leaders. So in thinking of that, this is what I'd love to see. So many of the states, so many of our colleagues that we've met through NASB have been working on both what the role of the principal should look like, almost a portrait of the principal, and what should be done in terms of recruitment, preparation, certification and licensure, continuing professional development, and then recertification. In some states, they put in a recertification process. We've had initial discussions about principalship in all of the discussions we've had recently with 1596. And I want to thank both Mike Saylor and Linnea Bradshaw and the Professional Standards Board for the work that they've done in talking about role of principal. But I'd like to see that expanded. I'd like to see Delaware, like Illinois, like Kentucky, like Massachusetts, take a deeper dive on the role of the principal and what should be required and how to make that the important position that it should be, the key leverage point behind the teacher to improve student outcomes. I would like to see a multi-stakeholder group involved in these discussions and looking at what Illinois did. Illinois involved higher ed. It involved the business community. It involved associations like DASA, the Principals Association, School Administrators Association. It involved the community. It involved legislators. And it was a broad, in-depth discussion of what this should and could look like. I'd love to see that here in Delaware. I know a number of our colleague states have undertaken this. NASB has certainly offered to help us with this. I'd love to see Wallace Foundation as a facilitator for this discussion, but I think it's an important discussion that we in Delaware need to have. And I think now would be the opportune time.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. And I just wonder, how do you get this ball rolling? Like, where do we need to start to do one of these programs?
I would suggest there are a number of things happening in Delaware currently that check some of these boxes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll give you two examples that come to mind. One is you have a board member who was at the principal of Mount Pleasant High School during Race to the Top. Mm-hmm. And Secretary Lowry came and met with me in my office with some others at 7 o'clock in the morning and convinced me and the assistant superintendent to apply for a federal SIG grant that gave Mount Pleasant High School two school leaders, one of which focused solely on academics. Jim Simmons was sort of fit the same description of what you just described in terms of operating the school and managing all events, et cetera. But that's not all that was required within that grant. We also partnered with Linda Poole and Lou Atkinson, mm-hmm. who came in and worked with the University of Delaware and all of Jim's core content areas mm-hmm. for school improvement. So it's not necessary, the idea of dual principals, et cetera, you know, that's been around for some time. I think the fiscal note in doing so is part of the challenge, the other being professional development, mm-hmm. right? And so the idea of getting the ball rolling and addressing those two things, I think, you know, that's certainly needed. The other example I would give that you might not be aware of is, you know, through Dazzle, we started a few years ago something called the AP Academy. I was intimately involved in this when I was at UD with Michael Saylor here at the department. governor's office in UD is paying for this. I'm making the assumption that 4 years later, they still are. Mm-hmm. But it's basically the 19 superintendents identifying current assistant principals who they know are going to be principals. And those assistant principals voluntarily getting support once a month on a Friday and a Saturday with a practitioner and through the University of Delaware, a practitioner and a researcher, right? And they have a mentor that they have to meet with, and that mentor is in a different district, not their own. I mean, it is a very formalized program with outstanding content addressing the kind of things we're talking about, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I would suggest, as soon as possible, invite Michael Saylor so he can do an on-point presentation about what is currently happening in Delaware with leadership preparation and support. And then the idea of following that, what could Wallace do for driving some of these innovative ideas further? I think that's a really sensible and good idea, mm-hmm. but I think it would make sense. Michael Saylor is really the point person here at the department on leadership development and support. Mm-hmm. So I just think it would be really helpful to hear from him directly. What are the different principal preparation programs?
Yep.
So we have a number of different ones in Delaware,
right.
Everything from traditional to, you know, to much different, not yep. as traditional.
Yeah.
And then sort of use that as a starting point or springboard, if you would, for, all right, what as a state board of education, what do we think we need further? And I think it's safe to say we need further. The question is, what exactly does that look like?
Yeah.
I mean, the other good thing is NASB is going to be continuing the conversation this year around principals. And in fact, they've invited the Aspen Institute back to do more discussions. And in fact, I've got a conversation next week with NASB as to a few other things that they wanted to talk with me about. So I would encourage you all, if you should be getting emails from NASB indicating their monthly seminars. And so I'd say keep your eyes open for those that involve principals. They're really well done.
Thank you. Anything else?
Nope, that's all from me.
Anybody else? We're moving on to the executive director's report. Ms. Smith?
Thank you. Yes, a couple things to add to my written report. I met with Kevin Dickerson this week. We just started that back up again solely because Dr. Dickerson is the chief of the chiefs, and the chiefs had requested a while ago that line of communication between the superintendents and the state board. So we've started that communication again, and that went very well. And he shared with me what the chief's priorities are for this coming year. And so it was good to make that connection again. Also wanted to note a date change for the Wilmington Learning Collaborative meeting. We had thought it was January 21st, but likely because of the inauguration, they have moved it to the 22nd. So that link will be corrected on tomorrow's weekly roundup for you. So you can note that on your calendar. And then for the January 27th boundary dispute hearing that we have, I'll present the exhibits on the board's behalf to the hearing officer, and there will be more details to follow about that when I share the hearing officer's recommended order before the March 20th meeting, and Dag Corbin will provide instruction as well.
Great. Any questions? All right, Secretary Holodeck.
I'm going to go off script a bit here tonight, being that this is my last state board meeting as Secretary of Education. I want to start with expressing my gratitude to all of you for volunteering as state board members. Like a local school board member, as some of you have been, this is often unknown and thankless work. And so your willingness to be here every month and the behind the scenes preparation, et cetera, that you do to be well prepared for your meetings is recognized and appreciated. So I've been secretary for 3 years. I'm incredibly proud of the progress that we made in a number of areas. Representative Chiwoka was here earlier, and he had mentioned the WLC that, you know, Jim Simmons and I and the governor and many others worked very hard to get off the ground. Our strong advanced placement scores this year across the state, the percentage and number of students, all students, but in particular students of color taking AP courses while simultaneously increasing the percentage of students in every subgroup passing AP tests with scores of 3 or higher is incredibly impressive. So really excited about that. Our recruitment and retention of educators in Delaware is as good, if not better, than any other state in the union. We have cut deep into the number of open positions over the last 3 years, each year less and less openings to start the school year. Not exactly where we want to be, but compared to the other states, really actually in a good place. And so all of that is still happening, you know, the grow your own and the many things we're doing with our future educator pathways programs, et cetera, really good things happening. With all of that said, so I'm proud of that, but I'm also pretty excited and optimistic about the future. And in fact, while I haven't met the current U.S. Deputy Secretary of Ed and future secretary here, Cindy Martin, I've not talked with her, but like all of you, I imagine, I've read her credentials and they are impressive. And I think, based on what I've read, really good timing for someone with her leadership experience and her background, in particular as it pertains to literacy and the fact that she was a literacy specialist, and you know, her experience as an elementary classroom teacher. Our biggest struggle right now in Delaware, as we all know, have been our reading scores. Math concerning too, but I really see this as an opportunity with a new administration coming in. And you may find that funny coming from the current secretary, but you know, that's how leadership works. You know, you have to look at when there is a change, what that opportunity is. And I, you know, having a strong state board like this, who is asking the tough questions and wanting to see progress combined with new leadership, that's an opportunity. So I just encourage everyone to embrace that and let's continue to make progress, because at the end of the day, it really has nothing to do with adults. It's the progress of kids that matters. So thank you. And of course, as a Delawarean, I'll, you know, stay engaged at the you know, appropriate place and at the appropriate time. But just to appreciate the past 3 years and the opportunity that Governor Carney provided me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, we're going to go off the path a little bit also here. We will be presenting the order of excellence to you in a few minutes, but a few things I want to say, and I'm sure everybody else might want to chime in. About 25 years ago, I was sitting in a boardroom in Del Mar, and we were interviewing this gentleman named Mark Holodick. There's probably about 20 of us in there, I imagine. It felt like 100
of you. Most intimidating interview I've ever participated in. It's true.
But he left the meeting, and I said, we got to hire this guy. He's going to be Secretary of Education in Delaware one day. I just know it deep down in my heart. But no, everywhere you've been in Delaware, education is better.
Thank you.
And we appreciate everything you did on the state level, district level, everything, everywhere you've been.
Thank you.
You've been a leader, and you've impacted, I'm not going to say thousands, I'm going to say tens of thousands of lives in one way or another. And Lord knows it's been a good run here.
Thank you. But, I appreciate that, Sean. Thank you.
You're welcome. And it's been a pleasure working with you, and bittersweet for me in ways, but.
Yeah, you as well. For me as well. Thank you.
So, anybody have anything else before we present the order of excellence to Secretary Holodeck?
I think I'd be remiss if I didn't take this opportunity to speak. I met Dr. Holodeck. Actually, he was Mark Holodeck back then, I believe.
That's right.
When he was, it was this rumor of who we wanted to be the incoming principal at Concord High School, and I was the dean of students. And so, you know, as the dean, or I think we were actually called the assistant to the principal. So I'm going to be like, who is this guy that everybody is talking about that I'm now going to have to work with and work for? And over those 20 plus years, I'm proud to call him my friend, but I've often said that I was able to do the things that I was able to do and get a lot of credit for with my staff because he gave me the leverage to do so. People think that I was getting away with things, but we would have some knockdown drag them out in his office.
He got away with a few things.
Only to leave better because we were able to have those open discussions with trust. I was always given that ability, I'm gonna say, to push back. But I really to say that I was being heard. And so I appreciate that from a professional growth standpoint, appreciate the friendship that we've developed over the course of some 20 plus years. And good luck to whatever happens and whatever your future endeavors will take you far and wide. And so I just wanted to take the time to say thank you.
Just a few words from me. I still remember the first time I met you as well, when you were part of a group of us sitting around a table with BEA discussing differentiated pay for teachers.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yes.
That's right.
And so, but you were always measured. You were always thoughtful about what we were discussing, and that impressed me tremendously. And, you know, knowing you while you worked for the Brandywine School District, and now getting once again the opportunity to work with you as part of the State Board of Education has been great. I really do appreciate your leadership over the past 3 years, and I wish you well in the future. I hope you're not gone from education entirely.
I won't be. I don't know what it'll be yet. But, of course, I mean, it's in my blood. So, yeah.
Good.
Thank you. Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll be real quick, Sean.
Sure thing.
Real quick. I, as I sat here and I thought about if and what I would say, and I was looking at you sitting next to Harvey, you really are mirror images of what it means to be a servant in the state of Delaware, listening to Sean, who proudly talks about hiring you in Delmar, and then knowing that you served in Brandywine, you literally touched kids from the bottom to the top of the state of Delaware, and then decided that wasn't enough, so you become Secretary of Education, so you could touch all those who are in between as well. But you have done it well. I came to know who you are before I met you because my friend Jim always talked about you. And when I met you, I understood why he held you in such high esteem. And having worked with you, our paths crossing when I was on Christina's board and in some other places, I think that it was all well deserved. You served Delaware well. And I have no doubt that, who knows, maybe as I'm sure a couple of weeks ago when he was retiring, he didn't think he'd be sitting around his table as well. But thank you.
Thank you for serving what you have. Thank you. Appreciate all the thoughtful
words. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I just share one comment. Thank you, Dr. Holodeck, for your service. And I really appreciate you for just being you, and being very comfortable in the skin that you are in. You've just been authentic and transparent and easy to be approached. I might, you know, ask some kind of tough questions around the board, but you never shied away from giving a frank, honest, direct response. And I really appreciate that. It's really refreshing to have someone in the position that you held, and you were very approachable and just transparent and authentic. So I just, I'm appreciative, and I have grown significantly, you know, underneath your partnership being with the Secretary of Education and the State Board of Education. So we look forward to continuing our relationship down the road. And I know that great things are in store for you. Thank you so much.
Reverend Powell, thank you. Any time your name is in the same sentence as Harvey Kenton and suggested that you have that kind of service character, it's a good night. So thank you. Appreciate all of the compliments. I really do.
I heard the PG version for a small fee. Afterwards, I will discuss the. All right, Mark, come on, Oscar. And we'll get. I'm going to be selfish first. I want one to Mark only, and then that's one I'll make sure they see it again in Delmar. Very good, sir. Congratulations, and thank you for everything you've done. Okay, every board member now.
Chairs out.
Good.
Good. And 1, 2, 3. And another 1, 2, 3.
Thank you.
Unless there's something you need to present, Mark, we'll move on.
You can.
This is your hall pass.
You can move on. Thank you.
Next on the agenda, formal public comment. Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for general public comment. Ms. Smith, has anyone signed up for public comment?
No, sir, they are not.
Thank you. Next, I will ask for the adjournment, and I think it'd be a good time for Mr. Kenton to do a motion on this one. Motion to adjourn.
Mr. Kenton, motion to adjourn.
Thank you, Mr. Motion. Mr. Mr. Kenton's made a motion. I need a second.
Stephen second.
And any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. It's 6:31 p.m. and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everybody, and have a safe travels home.